So today I'm joined by the wonderful Bridget, who is one of the directors of an organisation called the 316 Community. And Bridget is currently living in Brussels and is joining us today to talk about a very exciting art exhibition in a building we all know and love. So hello, Bridget. How are you today?
Hello. I'm very good and very excited to be talking to you about number 28 Grand Place.
This is such an exciting opportunity. When you got in touch, we were just like, oh, what are the chances? No way. This is now people can see inside the building that's been closed for quite a while. So can I start by getting you to tell me a little bit more about yourself and about the 316 community that have rented the Grand Place, but not the whole of the Grand Place, just number 28.
Not the whole of the Grand Place. Not even we have that much money. So 316 community is myself, my husband, Steve, and French pastor here in Brussels called Joel, and a guy from Suffolk called Jeff. And basically, Steve and I came here in 2018 because we are with a group of churches in the UK called Relational Mission. And we came here for that kind of a reason. Steve works for like a theatrical textile company here in Belgium called Showtex. And I am a sign language interpreter. And we then not long after we came here, there was Brexit and COVID and everything was a bit kind of, oh, what are we doing? I don't know what we're doing here, really. And then through a whole long story, which I can tell you if you want, we ended up renting 28 Grand Place to showcase some artwork by a lovely artist called Elise Retief, who goes to one of the churches here in Brussels. So I am also a fan of Secret Army, though. I never thought when I was 14, 15, sitting on my sofa in Southampton watching Secret Army avidly, that one day I would be renting the building. I never thought that would happen.
It's incredible. So should we start there then? Should we go to the beginning and start there and then work our way up to the present day and renting the building itself?
Sure.
So did you watch it when it first aired then?
I absolutely did. Yes, I was around 14, 15. And so I grew up with parents who had been children during the war who were evacuated. And I think looking back now, I can see that my mum was actually very traumatized by what the things that happened to her, because growing up, we would always, the war was always talked about in our house. Maybe I'm not alone in that. And we would always watch war films. So when something like Secret Army came on, obviously my mum was mad keen and my dad to watch it with me. And I think my dad was always interested in anything French or anything to do with the French language or France. So he was interested from that point of view. And it was fascinating. I think, obviously, I'd never realised that there were people who did this, who put their own lives on the line. I mean, I think I've read somewhere, you know, if you were part of the Comet Line, you maybe had 6 months before the Nazis found out who you were. You know, and I'd never thought, oh my goodness, this is what people read. This is based on real stories, because the scripts were written by people who knew the real situation in the war. So I think it had that authenticity. I was just gripped from day one. And so when I moved to Brussels, I didn't move to Brussels because of Secret Army.
Yeah, you didn't grow up and go, right.
No, I must go. Every time I went into the Grand Place, my heart went to the building and I went, oh, there's La Candide. You know, but it's been pretty much empty all the time that we've been here.
Because it was a restaurant, wasn't it? And then that closed down.
That's right. It was a restaurant, I think a Pierre Cardin restaurant for many years, and then it closed down. And then very briefly, as we came out of lockdown, there was a brasserie in there for a few months, not for very long at all, and that closed down. And then the doors were shut again. And if I'm honest, it looked a bit sad on the Grand Place when everything else was open. You know, it looked a bit neglected. So, yeah, so I can. Do you want me to tell you the story of how we got there?
Was it a case of you were looking for somewhere to display artwork and then?
Well, it was all a bit more organic than that. So so Steve and I were both Christians and we came here to establish something to do with our faith. And in order to sort of go with this story, it's important to understand that Steve and I both believe that God speaks today. So that's like a baseline thing. You can believe that or not believe it. That's what Steve and I believe. So a very nice friend of ours called Jeff was praying one day in a group and he said, God's saying something to me. It's about gold and jewellery. It's very important for you and Steve. I don't know what it means. We went, all right, okay, nor do we. fine, let's park that. And then a few months later, Steve was wandering through a metro station here in Brussels, and he saw an empty shop, and he just had a brainwave and thought, wouldn't it be great if there was like an empty shop or restaurant in the centre of Brussels where we could just welcome people, where we could be hospitable, people could come, it could be a creative environment, because we both worked in the creative industries, you know, it could just be a warm space, warm in the sense of not so much temperature as welcome, in the centre of town where everything else is commercial. And so we started to look for places, and our friend Jeff kept saying, remember the gold. And we went, okay, Jeff, all right then. So we tried a few things. There's an area of Brussels called Toison d'Or, which means the Golden Fleece. So we looked there, but that was all sort of posh shops. It's quite near the Avenue Louise, actually.
Oh, okay.
And we thought about jewellery areas or old jewellery shops. Nothing, nothing, nothing. And so we kind of forgot about it again. And then I had a brainwave. And suddenly one day I felt God saying to me, where do you go in Brussels and you see gold everywhere? Well, I don't know if any listeners have been to the Grand Place, but if you go to the Grand Place, which is the central square, the place everybody goes to in Brussels, all the buildings are painted and picked out in gold. I don't know if you've seen that. And I thought, of course, how stupid, of course, the Grand Place. So I went down to the Grand Place, and of course, straight away, as I always did, my heart went, oh, and there is the Condé. Now, each of the houses around the Grand Place were all built around the same time by different guilds or workers' groups. Mm-hmm. Louis XIV bombed the Grand Place, and then as a show of defiance, the people at the time rebuilt everything within sort of a 3 to 5 year period, about 1695 to 1698. And they all, each one of the guilds gave a name to the, each of the houses, whatever their profession was. So I thought, okay, I don't know what the name of La Candide is in the guild. So I'm going to look it up in Wikipedia. And blow me. In fact, you maybe know this already. Tell me, do you know this already, the name of it?
I don't think I do, no. Please tell me more.
Right, we're gonna get a live reaction now. I'm going to see if you can see this on Wikipedia. What it's called.
Oh, wow. So the Golden Merchant. Amazing.
The Golden Merchant, Marchand d'Or. I had no idea, literally no idea. So I thought, okay, this is a bit peculiar. And around the same time, a lovely French pastor that we know in Brussels called Joel, he said, I can see where you and Steve are going to have this place. I can see it. You know, it's like I've got a picture of it. I don't know what the room is, but there is carpet on the floor. Well, in Europe, you mostly have wooden floors, or maybe tiled floors. You don't often, you might have a rug. They're not, they think us Brits are crazy because we have wall-to-wall carpet. There's very little carpet. So we went down to the Grand Place and we had a little look in the side window, and blow me, there is a floor covering over the whole of the bottom floor of 28 Grand Place. So we thought, oh, okay, this is even weirder now. So then ensued a very long search for the owner. Now, the owner was an old chap called Joseph van der Velde, and he's a Flemish guy. In fact, he died in 2021, and so it passed to his children. And Joseph van der Velde is a colourful character. I found a magazine article online in French where he had claimed that 28 actually was used by the resistance. He also claimed that the military controller for the whole of Belgium for the Nazis, Van Falkenhausen, lived at 28 Grand Place. I'm afraid, having researched both of those things, neither of them are true.
It would make for a cracking story, though, wouldn't it, if it was true?
Oh, no, it's a great story. But I even got hold of the Comet Line Society lady and asked her, and she said, no. Anyway.
Was she like, oh, another Secret Army fan asking if they really used this building?
No, she wasn't, but she was very polite, but, you know, basically kicked it into touch. So we struggled to find the owner, to get in contact with them. Eventually, we just put a letter in French and Dutch through the door. We said a prayer. We said, okay, if this is the right thing, well, then this will happen, you know. And we, after that, found out later on that a workman used to go in once a month to check that the roof wasn't leaking, etc. And he used to just pick the letters up and generally throw them because they were just really old bills and things. But this one time, he doesn't really know why, he thought he'd look through them and he found our letter. And we got in touch with the owner. We went down to have a look. And so we're renting the whole building, but we're actually only using the ground floor and the first floor for reasons I will explain if you like. But if you like, the final sort of cherry on the top for us was when we chatted to the owner and we said, well, you know, your family, I mean, I don't want to be rude, but your family owns 6 or 7 houses along the Grand Place and other properties. You know, that's there must have been some money somewhere, I guess. And he said, well, you know, in the 1960s, nobody wanted these buildings. You know, they were very cheap. And I think they were quite dirty looking as well, from what I can tell in old photographs. But, you know, also my family, they had a lot of money. They used to deal in gold and jewellery.
Oh, wow.
So we thought, okay, this is it. So there you go. That's the history of how we ended up in La Conde. I was so excited.
That's incredible. And what a series of kind of connections and things sparked there. Mm. And tell me more about the person whose artwork you're displaying.
Okay, so Elise Retief is a South African lady. She paints what she sees God, she feels God has told her to paint. So sometimes the things will be linked to an idea in the Bible. So she's recently done quite a magnificent painting of a lion because of the way that Jesus is referred to as a Lion of Judah. But other things are perhaps more personal things. She often has quite figurative. She paints very, very colourfully. She uses the metaphor of bubbles a lot for dreams, things that we dream that we've given up on or we should go back to. Or, you know, so she quite often uses a lot of natural themes as well. And she's hopefully the first of several artists that we'd like to showcase.
Oh, amazing.
In the Grand Place.
How long has this current exhibition been open?
So we opened on the 23rd of December and we have the building officially for 6 months, but we are very hopeful we'll be able to have it for longer. The current owner would like to refurbish the building, but it's Belgian and there are, you know, permits. And so I think it could take him a little while. He's got to get architects involved. The upper floors, as you go up, it gets older and older. You know, the amount of time since somebody has been bothered to renovate it sort of gets worse as you get higher up. Well, because there's no lift, so you have to walk all the way up. At the very top is a sort of a garret flat, if you like, with a massive fireplace, no central heating, and a sort of a bathroom with a sink and a bath that look like they're straight out of the 1920s, maybe.
Right.
Yeah. So it's I think he would like to make it all into flats or something.
So how many floors does it have in total?
It has 5 floors in total.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And AJ, I look forward to you coming and we can explore all of them. And of course, it has a beautiful view out onto the Grand Place, which at the moment is all full of a big Christmas tree and a big nativity scene and lots of people. And, you know, so it's a great atmosphere. And in the evenings, there's a sound and light show as well. So it's got a fantastic atmosphere. It's an impossible place for people like us with no money to be. So, you know, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's incredible. Does it have a basement?
It does. It has a couple of basements.
Ooh.
I think probably for Secret Army fans, probably it's almost a little bit disappointing when you come in because the outside is completely how the outside was, you know.
Of course.
Alain's door is down the side in Rue des Arènes and, you know, everything is there. But at some point in its history, the floor, it's sort of been built up. Yeah, I've sent you some photographs you can probably see.
Just to explain for the listeners, you can kind of see in the pictures there's like a step up on the floor, isn't there? Yeah.
That's right. And that's to accommodate a kitchen underneath. So you go down and then underneath there is the whole professional kitchen and everything. And I think when you look then at the stills from the BBC set, Austin Ready used the door and the two windows, but the floor is much lower down and all one level, which I presume is how it would have been at one time.
Mm.
And also, of course, in the BBC studio, they sort of double the width of it. It's really huge. which makes more sense for TV.
And I think it's that thing when you're a fan, you have to remember that someone designed a set and it's not based on the real interior, is it? It's based on what they need for filming and things.
That's right. Well, and also I think Austin talked about going around Brussels and doing a lot of sketching. And I can see that. I can see that from the interior, what they've done with the walls and the mouldings and things. I can see that he's taken ideas you've seen in other places, because obviously I've been to lots of restaurants in Brussels. There's a lot of that kind of pale duck egg bluey green colour. That's very common. A lot of very dark, heavy wood. That's very common, you know, and the sort of the Art Nouveau kind of curly sort of mouldings. That's very common. So I can see where that whole idea has come from.
Yeah. And what I loved about speaking with Austin Woody was you could see the care that he had taken, like, to match the windows and the door. You know, he took that care,
yes,
to match,
yes,
the exterior in the walls and things.
Exactly, exactly. And I think I've been quite influenced by the fact there was always a curtain over the,
yeah,
door. So I have made a curtain now,
oh,
for
amazing,
the door. It is, of course, a golden curtain, naturally. But yeah, and also at the back, so the front of the building where we would expect the restaurant to be is one thing, but then at some point in its history, it's been knocked through into a house at the back.
Ah.
And the house at the back almost has no windows. It's like a long, thin thing with maybe a few windows one side and a few the other. It's quite dark. And it did occur to me that if you were going to hide some airmen, a house like that might be useful.
Oh, fantastic. It's so great to hear about what it's, you know, what it's like in real life. And it's great to hear that it's being used again. How have people been reacting to the exhibition, and when they've been coming in, what has the response been like?
Quite arresting paintings, a lot of them. So people are quite moved by them often. Sometimes the artist at least comes and paints in the window. And so people stay a while and spend some time. And she's provided some explanations for some of the paintings. And so people generally love them. Younger people quite often like their vibrancy and their colour. They get quite excited by them. You know, if you're the sort of person who likes a more traditional sort of style of artwork, they're perhaps not your thing. But, you know, we've had a very good response, and just also a response to having a warm, creative space. You know, we offer people a drink, and I've been making mince pies, you know, and I say, ah, voici quelque chose très anglaise. You know, we have this at Christmas, it's English. That I think that's been quite a wake-up call for people. They've gone, oh, you mean you don't want my money? Okay. I mean, we sell a few little things and postcards, but we're not a commercial enterprise. And I think people are a bit surprised by that.
And I think a lot of those spaces got lost during COVID. I know in,
yeah,
where I live now in Manchester, a lot of those creative, warm spaces where you could just hang out for very little,
yeah,
got lost. They closed, they couldn't stay open. And so it still feels like we're short of those kinds of spaces still now.
Absolutely. And I think creativity is something that can get pushed to the side when, you know, you're busy sort of trying to work and earn money and feed yourself. And, you know, I think as human beings, we need that. We need that response to art, that ability to create something out of nothing, you know, and I think that's who we are as people. We are naturally creative. So yeah, for me, that's very important. It's like touching something human, I think. So,
and you often, like when I've had jobs working in hospitals, we've had bedside music come round.
Yes.
And the impact it has on people has been incredible. People who maybe have stopped talking and communicating through dementia will suddenly sing, you know, upon hearing the music. Or someone with a terminal illness will be very touched that someone's come to sing with them for a little,
yes,
bit, and it's boosted their mood. So it's so powerful, isn't it? Is that creativity.
Yeah. Boosting mood. That's very important thing to say, I think. So that's the plan, to keep on doing it for as long as we can. And sometimes people put their head around the door and they say, secret army. And I say, yes, come over here. Let me talk to you.
That just provokes such a funny image of someone literally like poking their head around. And so have you had many people then stick their head round and say that so far?
I think there must have been someone pretty much every day. I am astonished. I mean, I don't know, what is it on Amazon at the moment, or BritBox or something?
It was recently repeated on Talking Pictures.
Ah, maybe that's why. I am always astonished that people younger than me, like yourself, know the series and like and enjoy it and like it. And I'm amazed at, you know, we had a little chat about the Iranians who like the series. You know, I've had several visits from Iranians in the short time we've been open. And they're very excited about it. Very excited.
It really means a lot to the Iranian people who watched it. Yeah. It just resonates so strongly with them even today, I think.
Yeah, well, that's been my learning curve, you know. I didn't expect that at all. I expected a few British people. And also, there are some Belgian people that come in. They don't really seem to know Secret Army. They don't remember it, even though it was a joint venture with BRT, which is now VRT. But I don't think it's repeated very often here. World War II is an interesting subject here because, obviously, the Comet Line was French-speaking Bruxelloise people. And then you've got a bit of a problem with sometimes there was some collaboration as well amongst the Belgian people. And, you know, not necessarily just Flemish people, it could have been anybody. But, you know, the whole divide between the French speakers and the Dutch speakers here is a big thing. It's a bigger thing than I thought it was when I first came here. And there is still that memory of some people resisted and some people collaborated. It still lingers a little bit in the air. Mm.
I forget the details, but I think also in terms of who would remember Secret Army in Belgium, it breaks down into which channel showed it and in which language was it dubbed into. And I think there is some groups of people who would have had it on their language channel, if that makes sense.
Okay, and others that didn't, yeah.
And so you have it breaks down into some populations of Belgium that way.
Yeah, well, VRT is the Vlaams, is the Flemish channel. So they are the ones who parted it with the BBC. But yeah, well, there you go. Welcome to Belgium. Belgium is complicated.
Oh, well, I think that's the end of my questions. Unless you would like to talk a little bit more about Secret Army, we could end perhaps on who some of your favourite characters are or what some of your favourite storylines were.
Well, I'm more than anything, I'm a fan of the accuracy of the production design, if I could say anything. I sew and I like to make clothes, and I used to do a bit of 1940s clothes making and dancing and what have you back in the UK. And I particularly enjoy some of the costumes that Juliet Hammond had and some of those. I particularly like the fact that they didn't give them hundreds and hundreds of different outfits, but they had quite a limited number because obviously they didn't have many clothes. It's not like today where, you know, we all go to Primarni and chuck it away. And I love the detail, the way they've got everything just right, and the hats and the hair and the, you know, all that stuff. That thrills me. Absolutely thrills me.
And again, speaks to how much time, effort, energy, care they put into the production.
Yeah, yeah, it shows. And I think it's things like that that make it stand out, you know, even today, stand up even today, I think. And the storylines, you could tell there was accuracy in the way it was written as well, that people who knew what they were talking about wrote the scripts, you know. It's not full of modern little bits of language, or sometimes you watch a period piece and they're saying things and you think, oh, they wouldn't have said that. Or, you know, it's very well observed is my comment.
Thank you so much for coming and talking to us today. It's been great to have you to us. It's just been me. But yeah, thank you so much for coming to chat. It's been so good to hear from you.
Everyone is welcome. Please come and see us. We would love to welcome you.
What are the opening times?
So we're currently open between Thursday and Sunday, afternoons and evenings, because some of us still work. If I get a bigger group of volunteers going, I'm going to try and open it longer hours.
You'll definitely have more visitors once more people start hearing about it. So yeah, thank you again. And we'll keep in touch and we'll keep updating everyone as to how it goes.
Perfect. Thanks, AJ.